Jesus said there was a man who had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, "Father, give me the share of the property that will belong to me." So the father divided his property between them. A few days later, the younger son gathered all he had and traveled to a distant country, and there he squandered his property in dissolute living. When he had spent everything, a severe famine took place throughout that country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him to his field to feed the pigs. He would have gladly filled himself with the pods that the pigs were eating, and no one gave him anything. But then he came to himself and he said, "How many of my father's hired hands have bread enough and to spare? But here I am dying of hunger. I will get up and go to my father, and I will say to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me like one of your hired hands.'" So he set off and went to his father. But while he was still far off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion. He ran and put his arms around him and kissed him. Then the son said, "Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your..." But the father said to his servants, "Quickly, bring out a robe, the best one, and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. And get the fatted calf and kill it, and let us eat and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found." And they began to celebrate. Now, his elder son was in the field, and when he came and approached the house, he heard music and dancing. He called to one of the slaves and said, "What's going on?" He replied, "Your father has come, your brother has come, and your father has killed the fatted calf, and he has done this because he got him back safe and sound." And the older son became angry and refused to go in. His father came out and began to plead with him. But he answered his father, "Listen, all these years I've been working like a slave for you, and I have never disobeyed your command, yet you have never given me even a young goat so that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours came back, who has devoured your property with prostitutes, you killed the fatted calf for him." Then the father said to him, "Son, you are always with me. All that is mine is yours. But we had to celebrate and rejoice because this brother of yours was dead and has come to life. He was lost and has been found." This is the word of the Lord. Of all the stories Jesus ever told, this one is one of my favorites. We call it the parable of the prodigal son. It makes the top 10 list of memorable Bible stories. Children learn it in vacation Bible school. Older adults nod their heads in recognition whenever they hear it. Young adults who wander off in their 20s and 30s hope the story is still true. It certainly is one of my favorites. I checked my files. I have 6 different sermons on this parable. This one is number 7. Many of us have heard it many times. We're well acquainted with the details. We think we know it pretty well, and perhaps we do. But for all the familiarity, For all the times I've taught it and preached it, I still have some nagging questions about the story. They have been nagging me so much that I'm going to toss them into the air this morning and let them nag you as well. Ready? Here's the first one. Why did he do it? Why did the son leave everything? Jesus never reveals the son's motive. He simply describes what the boy said and what he did. The son goes to the father and says, essentially, "Dad, I wish you were dead." That's the underlying assumption when he demands his share of the inheritance. He's saying, let's speed this up a little bit, old man. Give me what the lawyers will distribute after your demise. Don't make me wait. I want it now. What kind of kid says this to the parent? I mean, according to 2019 tax law, a living parent can give each of the children and their spouses up to $15,000 as gift without any tax implications. They can do that far in advance of ever probating the will. It is one way to beat the rules about inheritance taxes. But what child says, "Dad, give me my $15,000 now," to say nothing of, "Dad, give it all to me now"? And Dad is still working the farm. He hasn't yet bought the farm. What kind of child is this? We can find the words rather easily. He's greedy. He's selfish. He's callous. He's indifferent. He has no regard for his father. In the words of my own mother, who is here today, he's a brat. Does he deserve the money? No. But he's part of the family and legally entitled, so he makes his demand. Give me the money. Reminds me of when old Jim died in my first church. Old Jim was our congregation's resident multimillionaire. His attorney, Tom Weaver, knocked on my door one morning and said, "Put on your Sunday suit, put on your best power tie, come with me." We got into his Cadillac, we drove to old Jim's mansion. Old Jim had died in the middle of the night, and he was worth $37 million. All the children flew in, not to see him before he passed away, you understand, but for the reading of the will. All three of Jim's wives were there too, the two exes and the current one from whom he was estranged. Attorney Weaver was called in as the referee. I was there to plan the funeral. My job was easy. They said, keep it short. 23rd Psalm, short prayer at the graveside. They turned to Attorney Weaver and said, and then we'll go read the will. They said that so they could get back on their planes and return to Las Vegas or the Cayman Islands or the south of France or wherever it was that they had slithered in from. They were greedy. Didn't care a bit about the father. Just wanted his money. How does somebody get like that? What went wrong? Maybe it's a character flaw. I mean, he is the younger of two children, after all. The man had two sons. It could be that the older brother got all the notice, got all the good breaks, got all the preferential treatment, and rather than respect the older brother, you can tell him an older brother, the younger son began to resent it. It could be. This happens in some families. In fact, worse happens in some families. Certainly the kid exhibits poor judgment. He demands the money, he receives the money. What's he do? He blows all the money. He goes through it all. He doesn't invest for his own future. He doesn't save a nickel of it. He throws it all away. Was this because it was a gift and he wasn't required to work for any of it? Could be. Or maybe he was feeling confined on the old family farm and wanted the bright lights of the big city. I know, they didn't have lights back then, but you know what I'm saying. Jesus says he squandered everything in dissolute living. That's a nose-wrinkling word. Dissolute means decadent, self-indulgent, licentious, rakish, and he lost everything. In fact, says Jesus, he would have been happy at that point, his lowest point, to climb into a dumpster and lick the interior walls. Why did he do this? What's wrong with him? Jesus doesn't say. He dangles this description in the air, and once we get over the shock of it, once we get over the finger-wagging accusation, maybe this guy in the parable begins to look familiar, all too familiar. Because apparently, it's possible to be a beloved child and a brat at the same time. Why does he do it? The same reason anybody else would do it. He had been living at home and he was homesick. It is this fundamental homesickness, this longing for love and acceptance and recognition and restoration that can twist us out of shape. Within each of us, there's an empty place, a hole within the soul. And we try to fill that hole with any number of the world's delights, and we often dig the hole even deeper. So here's my second question. Why did he do it? Why did the Father take him back? Not only to take him back, but sees him from a far way off, runs to embrace him, interrupts the well-rehearsed repentance speech, and throws him a party. Why does the Father do this? This time Jesus gives us a reason. He is filled with compassion. Well, that's pleasant enough. Every wayward child wants a parent to be filled with compassion. But what's compassion? From the Latin, cum passio. Passio, to suffer, cum with. Compassion is to suffer with. As somebody puts it, compassion is the sometimes fatal capacity for feeling what it's like to live inside somebody else's skin. It is the knowledge that there can never be any peace and joy for me until there is peace and joy finally for you too. The Father understands the brokenness of the boy. He knows firsthand how that feels and what it compels anybody to do. He understands the wandering intentions of the soul, and he understands the all too human temptation to self-destruction. And he refuses to let those unchecked desires rule any longer. Now, this is an uncommon father. You've been to the Bible studies. You know that no Middle Eastern father ever runs to his children. He waits for the children to come to him. He is the center of power and authority. Yet that is exactly what he gives up in order to win back his son. In a way, then, this is kind of a Jesus story, a story of Jesus, who had the power and authority of God, but gives it up in order to win us back. The father in our story does this with extravagance. Put a ring on his finger, dress him in the finest robe, put his cracked bare feet in new sandals, Butcher our finest cow and fire up the barbecue pit. Hire the bluegrass band and invite the neighbors. My child was dead, but now he is raised from the dead. This is unrestrained generosity. From a father who previously had been so generous to hand over a share of the future inheritance to his formerly indifferent son. Which means it is also inflammatory generosity, provoking an angry reaction from the boy's older brother, who never did anything wrong, never wandered off on his own. But the father insists there too, even to the point of going out to him once again to implore the good older brother to join the family reunion. The father wants everything restored the way it was originally created to be. That's why he does what he does. Ready for the third question? What does this mean for you and me? I think it can mean any number of things, especially if we resonate with one of the characters in the story. If we ever wandered off like the younger son, it could mean one thing. Forever resentful that the wanderers are welcomed back and forgiven, it could mean another thing. And if, like the father, we long for the healing of relationships, it can mean still another thing. I think it means that we are to become and invited to become like the father. To love both, to love all, to do what we can to restore whatever has been broken. John Philip Newell has been part of the Iona community of Glasgow, working for the reconciliation of heaven and earth, city and country, poor and rich. In his writings, he reminds us that the Celtic Christians point in their faith all the way back to the Garden of Eden, that there was an original goodness, a memory of God's creation, a memory, a recurring memory, when everything was united and one. Here's what he says about that. It was Meister Art Eckhart who said, "All creatures seek the one. This longing is deep in the stuff of our nature. It is deep within the body of the cosmos. We seek the one by seeking oneness with each other, by seeking to be in relationship with the rest of our life, by living in relationship with everything that has being. The tragedy is that we've fallen out of touch with this holy natural longing. Divisions have multiplied divisions. Fears have fed upon fears that drive us further and further apart. Grace, as someone said, is the seed of resurrection sown in our nature, and the greatest of graces, love, is what reawakens the deep longings of our being, the hunger for oneness, the desire for unity. How do we bring this greatest of graces to the relationships of our lives, our relationship with one another, our relationship as nations, our relationship with the earth? So what does this mean for you and me? A boy runs away and squanders what he has, comes to his senses, and is welcomed home. This is a salvation story, not just for the boy, not just for the father and the family, but it is a sign of what God desires for the entire creation. It's a renewed memory of the Garden of Eden, where all things fit together and flourished in peace. And it's the great hope of what the Spirit of Christ wishes to create among us and then calls us to pursue peace, harmony, forgiveness, reconciliation, with love ruling over all. And when we scrape away everything else, all the posturing, all the self-righteousness, all the fake virtues, this is our deepest longing for everything to return to the way it was created to be. The blessing is that that is the shape of Christ's greatest work, as much as it is our work to restore what has been broken, to restore whoever has been broken. When you get right down to it, it's just like going home.